Attention musicians of all levels. It's not always easy picking out a song by ear. Sometimes you need a little help. Well, I have the app for you. Whether you're a professional musician or a beginner, Ultimate Guitar is an amazing app. For just $2.99, you get the chords and tabs on guitar, bass, or ukulele for over a million songs. They're all available at your fingertips. You also get tools like a tuner, metronome, chord library, lessons, videos, and more. You can find out any song you want. It also has like transpose button. It has auto scroll that you can change the speed to so you can play along with the song. A lot of the songs have the lyrics there so you can sing along with them. Ultimate Guitar is an amazing app. Just go to ultimateguitar.com or download the app to your phone today and start playing. Start playing any song you want. Ultimate Guitar, that's the place for you. Let's get down. Hey gang, we all know Spotify has become the ultimate app destination for music lovers. I have an account and I love it. I find new music by following Tastemaker playlists, and I make my own playlist that I share featuring music from guests that have been on the show. But did you know that aside from millions of songs, Spotify now has all of your favorite podcasts, including How Did I Get Here? Yes, all of your podcasts are available on Spotify. Just go to Spotify.com or download the app from your app store, and don't forget to follow How Did I Get Here? That's Spotify. Millions of songs, thousands of podcasts. Let's get down.
You may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys have all had a good week, whatever it is you did this week, and you're easing into your weekend in style. I want you to ease into your weekend in style. That's what I'm looking for. That's what I want you to do. That's what I think we should all do. And listen, if you live in San Antonio or the surrounding areas, you can ease into your weekend in style by coming and seeing Skyrocket, the band, tonight, Friday, October 15th, at Sam's Burger Joint Music Hall. Come on out. Always a good time. We start at 9. You might want to make sure there's tickets left before you come down, because last time we sold out, there were some people stuck outside listening to it, not being able to come in. But anyway, come on down Friday, October 15th, Skyrocket at Sam's Burger Joint. Also, the day that I'm doing this, which is the day before it comes out, Thursday, October 14th, that's my birthday. So today's my birthday, 53 years old. Had some plans, but we had to kind of break them because Skyrocket got a last-minute gig. We're playing at Stubbs here tonight. Should be fun. Little private gig. We're playing outside, actually, on the big stage, which is fun, playing a stage. We've seen so many of your heroes, like Billy Idol, Cheap Trick, The Cult. I've seen so many great bands there. So many. Anyway, so my girlfriend curated a little get-together at this little tequila and mezcal place that we like to go to that's on the corner right by our house called La Holly. We went over there. A small group of friends, my cousin Emily, a couple of other friends. We had a great time. My friend Allie surprised me with a cake and balloons. People gave me great gifts. My girlfriend gave me awesome shirts. My cousin Emily gave me a very rad Rick Rubin shirt, which I will be wearing proudly from time to time. Great. It was a great time. Small gathering, good people, good times. Not tonight, I'm playing at Stubbs. Tomorrow night, or the day you're listening to this, I'm playing at Sam's in San Antonio. And then Saturday, dudes, check this out. I am going to meet the family. Yeah, we're going to San Jose, California on Saturday for a family get-together on Sunday with my girlfriend's whole family, and I get to meet them all, see what it's all about, and we're coming back Monday. So it's going to be exciting. I'm very excited to meet all these people that made this wonderful woman that I'm in love with. So I'm excited to go there and mix it up with the fam. I'll let you know all about it on Wednesday's show next week. Gang, I have a great show for you guys today. Check it out. I'm sure you saw on there the Gowdies. You're like, who are these people? Is this his family? I don't know. Maybe distant relatives or something. My Gowdy family comes from the UK, but then there's the whole, all my grandparents came to America from Cuba. So there's that. My parents both came to America from Cuba as well. Anyway, we know that our people started up there in the UK, And Sam Gowdy actually reached out to me at some point on Instagram, was like, hey, we got the same last name, whatever, maybe we're related, whatever, hi, I'm Sam. And I'm like, hey, I'm Johnny, how you doing? He's like, cool. He's like, you're a musician, I'm a musician. I'm like, yeah. So I go and I check out their music, and they had just put out their brand new EP, their debut EP, called When This Is Over, which you can find anywhere you stream and download music. You can also find them at thegowdys.com. But the band is a duo, he and his wife, Beth Gowdy. They've been married since about 2014. They've got a couple of kids. They both did their own music before and then eventually like pair it up together. And you get this like a file under Americana in the vein of Gillian Welch and David Rawlings and the Civil Wars. Fantastic music. Anyway, they're also really sweet people. They started a live stream during quarantine called Tiny Show Tuesday. Go to thegowdys.com and find out, you know, wherever you can find their stuff. Anyway, so they decided last year to just kind of sell off their stuff, pack their kids up and them in a van and their music instruments and just travel around the UK playing music and doing all that stuff. It's kind of thwarted a little bit by the pandemic, but we have a really great conversation. It's via Zoom. They're in the UK. I'm here. But, you know, I have to say, for those of you that listen to the show, you know that I bring you people that you know. People from the scene around here that you've known for a long time, if you're from Austin or you're a fan of Austin music or stuff. A lot of people like, you know, obviously some bigger people like Styx and Bodines and the Go-Go's and stuff like that. But also, I introduce you to bands that you might have never heard of because you're kind of in this region and your reach doesn't go that far. But if you're a fan of Gillian, if you're a fan, like this band sounds like they could be from Austin, like in the family of like Don and Hawks. And those bands, you know what I'm saying? Beth James, those bands, like the husband and wife duo, Love and Chaos, not husband and wife, but you know what I mean? Like those bands that have a front, two front people, they both write songs, they sing well together, and that's what's going on. So Sam and Beth, amazing songwriters, really sweet people. We have a great conversation about how they met, kind of their journeys in music, what they've been doing, what they're planning on doing now that they've released their debut EP. You can find them at thegowdys.com, and please, I hope you guys have a great weekend, whatever it is you do, and please enjoy my conversation with Sam and Beth Gowdy, better known as The Gowdys. Let's get down.
Maggie slowly climbs the stairs. She is stronger than her body. Every step another picture in a frame. In her book another name. She lights a candle for them all.
It's great to see you guys. So are we cousins or what's going on here? Are we family?
Yeah, what's our relation?
I was trying to work it out. Do you have any connection to Scotland at all?
Of course, yeah, that's where they... My Gowdy family moved to Cuba. But yeah, they started off in the Upper Hebrides.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Where Trump's mom is from.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Lewis. The Isle of Lewis.
Yeah. Wow.
So did they move, like, after... Because Trump's family were involved in a Scottish revival.
I think she was a MacLeod up there.
Yeah.
Do you guys know the singer songwriter Colin MacLeod? He's from up there.
Oh, I don't think so.
No, the name rings a bell.
He's great. I thought maybe you guys might have run into him somewhere. So where are you now?
Well, we're on the road. We're actually in Newcastle, which is in the north of England.
Pretty close to Scotland, actually.
It's the last, on the east coast of England, it's the last city. Am I right? Before Scotland? Yeah.
We've got Northumberland in there.
It's the last big city before Scotland on the east coast. So we're currently staying with Beth's parents. It's a bit of a long story, but we were living right in the south of England on the south coast. And we've sold everything. We're currently traveling, which is fun, isn't it?
It is fun.
So we'll probably get more into that on the whenever you're recording. But yeah, it's we're in Newcastle right now.
Go from the beginning.
Awesome, we're in.
That's good. I'm glad we didn't say anything terrible. Not that we would. yeah, so we're in Newcastle, which is, as I said, the north of England, and we were living in Dorset in the south of England. And yeah, it's been a funny few months, eh? Well, 4 months.
A bit more than that.
Mate,
it was me.
Yeah.
4 months.
So yeah, a lot's happened in between, but we've got two kids as well. We've got a little boy and a little girl, so they're with us as well. They're three and nearly four and nearly two.
Wow.
That's good fun.
You guys look really young for.
Yeah, I've shaved recently. Our son, he was a bit like, he was like, "Dad, when's your beard coming back?" And I think he just sort of. Yeah, so I'm in my 30s. I'm 34.
You're
not there yet.
You're not there yet. You're not, best not quite in a 30 yet. Maybe Zoom is like a really kind camera. Maybe I look.
Well, I'm using a light.
It's kind of dimly lit.
I'm using a light that makes me as youthful as possible, I think. But it's also blinding me. So maybe you look like old people. I don't know what's going on. Hey, your EP is fantastic. So this is your first outing as the two of you.
Yeah.
As the group. But you played, Sam, you were on Beth's stuff before that, right?
Like, that's right. Yeah. So we met as solo artists
a long time ago, in
Cardiff, which is the capital of Wales. That's where we were both living near.
Mm-hmm.
We met a long time ago doing that. And then when we got married, I started playing your band.
Yeah.
Because I just wasn't writing.
Free guitar player.
Yeah, guitar player. Yeah, I'm playing... Yeah, it's nice to be able to play together, isn't it? Like,
yeah, it was good for us, that.
And we sang a few songs together. So you were pushing forward at that time, weren't you? Like with
an album and
having children.
I was going to say, we were having kids and things like that. So it was kind of always, we've been married 7 years, nearly 8 years.
Yeah.
So it's kind of been like establishing our marriage, our family life, but... between our kids, we made the album my album that's out. So we put that out, and it was kind of just keeping pushing forward. But there was never a good time to, I think, jump in fully, right?
Yeah.
Once baby started coming and stuff like that, we kind of didn't have the. So the album that we released, yeah, my album 2 years ago, it was just like.
We recorded it in the evenings.
Yeah, we just went, put our baby to bed, went down the street, and it was great and quite amazing how that all came together. But it was kind of just about getting these songs out. The oldest song on that album I wrote just a couple of weeks after we first got together. It was like 7 or 8 years old. And they were just all in my system, and I was like, I just feel like I need to record this season of life. And get these songs out. And so we just made it and released it. And then I think our daughter was born about 6 months after that. So,
yeah.
And then she was 8 weeks old when we went into lockdown and all, so it's been strange, and not kind of the usual process of things. But then, yeah, in the last year, we knew it was just time to do it together. And
I think the big jump was that Tally was coming up to be one, our daughter was coming up to be one, and you said you wanted to do, let's do like a live stream or something to be, I don't know what it was like for you, Johnny, but like it was really weird, like writing music and not being able to play out and not being able to try songs and all that kind of stuff. So, we just started doing a live stream.
Yeah, and it all kind of, it grew from there, didn't it? I think it's been... kind of sitting there like it was always going to happen, right? This is always going to happen. But we kind of had a now or maybe never moment, I think.
Yeah.
And it's going good.
It's a weird thing, isn't it, to be a married couple doing music. You have to kind of go through a process.
I'm fascinated with it.
Yeah.
I am. I'm wondering like where the, how, like, because everything's blurred. It's just a big, giant mess of everything. So my question is always like, is one of you getting mad at the other one because of something that happened in the domestic part of life, or are you like in your life pissed off because one of you sang flat last night or something like that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. Totally.
A lot of grace, right? A lot of grace and being able to say sorry quickly and forgive and forget quickly,
and
you know?
Accept
it quickly. Like that's kind of an ongoing, that's a thing that music aside, that's something that we try and implement in our marriage and even with our kids. And we're trying to teach our eldest already that if he says sorry, he'll be forgiven and forgotten, and kind of making that a good culture, a culture in our family. We have these like moments where we might bicker about something just before we're going on live to do something.
Yeah, yeah.
Not tonight, but
it's usually something.
Yeah,
like
something
banal.
Are you freezing?
You know, I have to learn how to just let those things go and move forward.
But it's a good practice, because I think like when you get married, a friend of mine was getting married and he said to me, what's like your one piece of advice? And I said, like, that getting married is a process of learning how selfish you are.
Yeah.
I think that's a really, really big thing. And you're so used to doing like life yourself and being able to make all your own decisions and all that kind of stuff. And then you suddenly are in like a partnership that is for life. And you suddenly have to learn, okay, like my preferences, my way of doing things, my like thought processes, all that kind of stuff. They're not like, they're not objectively right as well.
Right,
the first thing.
Exactly.
But the second of all, like learning to accept and make something together. Your marriage is something you build together. And I think that doing that has been really good as two solo artists coming together who have had quite clear visions of what we wanted to do at different points, to varying degrees, and actually doing that together and learning how to like honor each other and write together. And I think, we had a long time doing that in your band, which was really good. And I think that allowed me to kind of learn how to sit back. My voice is naturally a lot louder than Beth.
So we have to like angle ourselves.
Like, I have to kind of step away from the mic. So just even those sorts of practicalities, like learning not to overpower, learning how to give space for something louder, all these different things. It's a work in progress, definitely.
Yeah. And I think that's what kind of the first seven years of marriage, we've been together longer than that, but that season of our lives was, through lots of different ways, was us getting ready to be able to work together, because we just couldn't have done it. We just couldn't have done it like 5 years ago, maybe even 2 years ago, we couldn't have done it. And because like Sam's saying, we've done it alone for all of this time.
Right.
And there's nuances, there's like just the way that I approach a song and like what that means to me and the reason I write a song and what I really care about most in a song is like completely different to you, right? Like the heart of the song is the same, but like sonically, we've got really different.
But I think there was a point where we suddenly came together, and that was like through country music, right?
Yeah.
Like it's like our whole music world like came, because I was kind of into like, I've got quite a wide range of music, but like probably liked more kind of like alt country, maybe sort of like noisier sort of stuff. You liked kind of quieter sort of stuff and more focused on. You were focused on lyrics, and I was focused on the kind of Tom Rudd.
Yeah, and that's what.
Sam, what was your name? Some of those bands that you were into.
Yeah, so I've always loved like bands like Wilco and I really loved isn't it funny when that happens, when it's kind of completely
everything
goes out of your head. Yeah, like the War on Drugs. I just think a main band. Also like newer bands like Pine Grove and those guys. But the thing, I think that kind of like someone that really got through and made me think a bit differently about music was Jason Isbell.
Uh-huh.
When I came across him and started listening to him, I was like, oh, wait, I can, like, we can do both. Like, we can make this this sound, but also have a real heart to it. Because we both like, you know, artists like Damien Rice and Foy Vance and those guys, those kind of Irish singer-songwriters.
Guys, Richard Thompson.
I've never really felt the...
Yeah, we do.
Yeah. And Fairport Convention and...
Yeah,
Teddy Thompson actually.
Yeah, have you heard his son, Teddy?
I have. I feel like I did a show with him.
That's cool.
Oh, cool.
Like I opened for him somewhere.
Yeah.
At some point, I can't remember.
He's got one. I mean, he's got loads of great songs, but there's just one song. You know, like I don't know him kind of deeply, but there's one I saw him play live in Cardiff.
Mm.
Got a song called Separate Ways, which. That kind of made it into my lifetime playlist, you know,
that
one song. So it was really good to come to a place for us where really accepting ourselves and each other's preferences or like the thing that makes us tick with songs, you know, and simplified, it's like top line for me, you know, music, lyrics and melody.
Exactly.
And for you, it's like everything else.
Right.
And so when we write, and this is what's happening for me like in my solo stuff, I could just sit and write just kind of, what do I call it? Pensive folk. I'm just kind of sitting there finger picking, kind of just slow stuff where I'm thoughtful and thinking and all, and I could like Damien Rice, I could just, I could just sit in that forever, you know. But together, like, you know, I might bring a song to Sam now and then he just brings it to life, you know, and that's what I would say. I would say that of now working with Sam so equally. You had big input on that last album, but we're kind of equally in this. For me, the thing that I'm like most excited about is that I don't have to work. I don't have to do that bit anymore because he's so good at it. You know,
right.
I can bring a song and just say, this is it. Like I'm playing this really simple thing underneath, but the thing I'm bringing to you is the top line.
Right.
Like what, how do you hear it? What could we do with that? You know?
And I think for a long time, particularly on your album, they're trying to work out how to do that. There was a lot of kind of, like spacey kind of like paddy guitars and that kind of stuff because I didn't want to play anything too angular or too like loud with too much feedback anything like that because I didn't want to overpower that stuff. So there was a lot of ambience. And then when I really started digging into David Rawlings, who plays with Gillian Welch, the way he like supports Gillian Welch's voice and the way the two guitars come together, I was like, oh right, okay. This is amazing.
They've been very helpful
to us. Yeah, they not that we know them, but they're
magical. Their thing is magical.
It's incredible.
It's like it's like Graham Parsons and Emmylou Harris. Like it just is undeniably great.
Totally, Johnny and June, all of those.
Johnny and June, Hey, Beth,
there's something there. Sorry. You know,
no. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just saying the honor that they have for each other. I think like when you see them play live, like there's a way that they kind of like look at each other and support each other. They're neither of them are trying to grandstand. They're literally there for the song. They're not trying to do anything like gain anything on each other.
Level,
they're just like they're so like authentic in the way that they're presenting themselves. And also, I mean, Dave Rawlings is a great producer, a great guitar player.
Great.
I mean, he's produced some of our favorite records by like Doors and people like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, you're going to ask him.
I was going to ask you, Emma, some of your, I know you like Damien Rice, but who else?
Hmm.
Who else speaks to you?
You know, for me, there's a few heavy hitters, you know, like just like a handful of people that I've just grown up listening to and I just go back there all the time. And then it's like songs. So rather than like, I'm really into this one person, I'm like really into that song by them. It's not that I don't like the other stuff, but I get just hooked on a song. So I grew up listening to, like my dad played Leonard Cohen and we listened to Damien Rice today in the car with my mum actually. I don't know how familiar you are familiar you are with the album, but that had a profound impact on me. I was like a young teenager when that came out, and just was moved by it. Foy Vance. I went to a show of his when I was 15, and I said that's what I want to do. That was kind of that moment for me.
Yeah.
Billy Joel. So actually, his like whole back catalog. Billy Joel. I used to drive around as like an 18-year-old blasting Billy Joel. I was like, I've got to be one of the only ones in the town I lived in. Rufus Wainwright. So.
Oh yeah.
Like just great songwriters.
Yeah.
I've seen Rufus live quite a few times, and it's not that I think that comes out obviously in my own music, but I just love great songwriters, you know, that are just writing classic songs that, just go on and on, you know. Go on.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that Rufus was one of the highlights of my pandemic time. Seeing him play piano in his robe every day on Instagram was like a daily treat for me. I love that guy.
So good. So good.
So you guys started doing that live stream thing. How did you like that? Do you still do it?
We did a season, didn't we? And we basically did it until we sold up.
Yeah.
Because we weren't sure what internet was going to be like in the places we were going to be. I think we're going to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. It was a really odd thing because neither of us had done that. It was a really weird way to launch a new project.
Yeah.
But kind of nice because when we started doing it, we were going to be like Sam Gowdy and Beth Gowdy, like with our own solo projects. And we were just going to do this live stream together, play some songs, play in between. And just through the week, like really organically, we saw that actually the things that people really gravitated towards were the songs where we played together. So then we started writing together. We wrote the song When This Is Over. And just over time, we were like, okay, we're going to be Sam and Beth Gowdy, kind of like Rich and Linda Thompson, you know, like, name it like that. But then there was a point, it was after we'd recorded the EP, that we decided to be the Gowdys and actually like name it that and kind of commit to it. But I don't think we would have got there if we'd have literally just said like, yeah, we're going to do this.
I don't think we'd be doing this without those live streams.
No.
Not yet, at least. Because it took that to... It came about because, like, as Sam said earlier, we were just like, let's just play some songs. I feel fulfilled when I'm singing a song to somebody else, you know? That's the connection to me. So even just before our call, we were just working on, I was just downstairs playing some songs, Sam came down, and then we were working on something new. And I want to share this. Like, that's what's in me. Like, I just want to share this thing I'm feeling, this thing I'm thinking, or this song that we're working on. And so that was the kind of pull to do the live streams. And then it became a weekly thing. And then like the same people came every week, give or take. You know, we had some new people and some people couldn't make it, but we had this like core group of people that would come in every week, and they were all talking together. And we had kind of these running jokes, and we did a Will It Country section, a song every week in a little, which became like just really good fun with everybody else. People would vote on what song we should do. And it was really special. And like this, you know, this came out of it, but also, the community around it. Mm-hmm. And you know, I don't want to be overly sentimental, but we like in the UK at that time, we were locked down for the second time.
It was a tough one.
And it was a really tough time because the first lockdown was hard because like nobody knew what on earth was happening.
Right. Right.
But the first time we could all go outdoors and it was sunny and light, you know, light evenings and things. But the second one, it was winter and it was tough. So for us, it gave every week we had this thing we were working towards. So we'd finish on a Tuesday night, then the next day we'd choose our songs for next, you know, the next week. And so we had this thing we were working towards. But then, you know, we'd have people say, this is the highlight of my week, you know, and that doesn't make it, like, that's not an ego boost for us, but it's an honor, you know, it's a privilege to be able to bring like that kind of light to somebody's week each week. You know, we just had fun.
It was beautiful.
It wasn't like the most polished thing, was it? But it was just, like, really good. It was like a really good time with these people.
We had a great moment. Like, recently we played, I think, our first it was a weekend where we were playing like our first ever in-person shows. Mm. And these two people came up to us in the street. We were playing a show the next day, and we were playing in the center of a town where we were living. That's it. We were doing a songwriting circle just on the street, actually. And these two people walked up and he said, "Oh, you don't know us, but we know you." And they'd like literally encountered us through the live streams, and they'd been on every week, so like we knew their names.
Yeah,
we were just never, you know, known their faces.
And as soon as they said, "We don't know us, but we know you." I was thinking, like, my head was going to like all these different places of like, where do I know these people? They said their first names, and I went, "Oh, yeah,
it was beautiful." Wasn't
and it? It was like one of my favorite moments of my life. Honestly, it was like, because they were there every week, as Sam said, and
yeah, they were amazing.
Really part of it. And you know, we actually don't know how this couple found us. We don't know where they're even from. It turned out they weren't too far away from us, you know, when we were living down south.
Yeah, it just made it real, didn't it? I think it brought that whole thing together, and it was really sweet, like the people were there at the beginning of
what we're doing now,
you know.
Yeah, that was something I did it at first because obviously I needed some money and stuff, and so I did it, and I did it for like every week for like a month, and then I'd take a month off. And when I took the month off the first time, kind of the response from the people, I realized like, oh, everyone's under lockdown. And this is like one thing where they can go and like kick back and watch on their, you know, computer or their pad or their TV or phone or whatever they're watching it on. And like, you know, have this like time with an artist that they like. And that to me, I didn't get it at first. I gotta admit, man, I'm sitting there singing to my phone. I felt like such an idiot. You know what I mean? Like, I was just like, what am I doing? But it ended up being a lot of fun. And it's really like, it is something that's great for people, especially, you know, in the situation that we've been in for the last, I don't even know how long now.
Totally.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Totally. And I think, it was a really weird thing to just press that record button and almost like open like a window, open a door to the world. For like a really brief period of time. Especially because we used in-ear monitors while we did it. So we could like, we had the sound through the mic. So it didn't really feel like we were just in our room. And every week we did it and we pressed the button. The first week, like, we sort of looked like deer in headlights. But it was like we just opened this door, like, to the world at a time where we all felt really isolated. And then every single week, like, when we pressed the stop button and took our ears out, it was like, you know that feeling when you come home from a gig and you've, like, kind of stepped, you've been on the stage world, and then you suddenly, like, you know, on your way home, you're, like, eating food or whatever. And it feels like a different world.
Mm.
It felt like that, but like in an instant, it was like taking ears out and we were just home and we were eating cereal. Like, you know, that was a really weird thing, but how real it was that we were like outside of that room. That was a strange thing I wasn't expecting.
It's like a skill. It's a skill to acquire, isn't it? Like to go live and to be on it. Like, we don't watch them back. We'd kind of just check the sound was okay, you know, after it, and maybe hear like some go back to a moment that was fun, you know, that was funny or something. And
yeah,
there were some weeks when, like, I felt like I was connecting, and I like it in speech, man, in between the patter and things like that. And then there's other weeks I was like, I feel like I just like was barely functioning in between something. And it's because it's such a strange, it's a strange thing, isn't it? Because we were talking like that couple, like they were there with us. They knew us. We, you know, we'd be telling stories about like things that happened that day or that week in our home. But as much as we could try and respond to what people were typing, it was quite one, you know, it's a one way thing, isn't it? You're talking to a group of people, and it is a conversation, but it's not, because we're speaking. And they're only able to type, and it's a bit delayed and all of that. So kind of like you have to really learn how to be present, or I don't know, something, and I don't quite articulate it well. But
I think also it's a bit like this. You're you have to like learn how to kind of live with the idea that whatever you say is being recorded.
Yeah,
right. Like, yeah. You know, kind of like go through that whole thing. And, you know, just that whole thing of like being very conscious of,
yeah,
not necessarily the permanence of it, but the fact that like it's mm. going out into the world. Like, you know, obviously if you make a mistake or anything like that and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah.
That's amazing. I relate to that. It felt, there were a couple times where I did it where I had like a full on, like just get wasted, like drinking vodka and like smoking cigarettes on my porch, just talking to like an old friend of mine that had watched the show or something. You know what I mean? Like full on, yeah. Like rock and roll after party, like all sweaty. And like so let me ask you a question about this. When you guys got to do this, or you got to this, at least these three songs that you've released, are these ones that you ended up collaborating on, like writing, or Beth, did you continue to write? And like, what was the, how did you approach this differently than you would on your own?
The three songs are all
different,
isn't it? Yeah. So, well, When This Is Over is kind of the, oh, it's obviously the keystone song because it's the name of the EP, and it really sums up this time.
Mm.
And that was something where it's the first time we'd ever like co-written together, and but it started with you kind of like bringing something, and then we were allowed in the UK, we were allowed a daily walk, one a day, and so every day when we took the kids out on the walk, we were kind of like, going through the lyrics and really learning each other's strengths in songwriting. Mm-hmm. So that one came together like as a co-write. Ashes, though.
Ashes. I wrote Ashes a couple of years ago as part of a songwriting portfolio. I can't think of the word portfolio then. As a portfolio for something else I wasn't going to release, and you were kind of we live in a house so together, so like Ashes as an example, there was like just a touch of that song that had come from something you were writing, wasn't it? Like,
but I'd just been playing around the house.
Yeah, he'd just been playing around the house, and then when I played it to Sam, he was like, oh, it's a bit like, you know, so actually accidentally I took a bit of Sam's song for that, but I wrote that all for a project 2 years ago. And then, and it was on piano, so it was a very different kind of song, really, wasn't it? And then on one of the Tiny Show weeks, because we did 17 of them,
okay,
the Tiny Shows. So, and every week we tried to bring something new, you know, that people hadn't heard. We did repeat a few things, but what happened maybe around week 7 or 8, when we'd run out of the obvious songs to play, we started to digging through the drawers of like the things that we've written in the past. And Ashes was like, obviously that song had been written, but the way that came out on guitar was, I was just sat in our conservatory, and I think the kids had just gone to bed or something like that, and I just started playing through the kind of, you know, it's kind of the finger picking part of that, and I sang it over it, and we both was like, oh wow, that works, doesn't it? So let's do that. And you came on with your part for that.
Yeah.
So that one was different again, and then Maggie's Praise.
Yeah, Maggie's Prayers is like, so all of these songs, whenever we do like the writing, like even if one of us leads it, we always put it down, at least in the moment, we always put it down, Beth Gowdy, Sam Gowdy, that we've written it. We actually don't change the order. I know like Lennon and McCartney used to swap the order around. But we don't do that because we do live together, and because we are like constantly talking about songs. Even like the songs that were like, well, that was like maybe like 90% one of us, it's still, it's a bit like, you know, when you do like a songwriting session, we were talking to a friend of ours, we were songwriting with him, and we were saying about how do you do splits and how do you work that out? And he just says, like, whoever's in the room gets like an equal slice of the pie. Like, and I think that's great. We are always in the room. Like, we're always in the room together,
right.
You know, like, so even if like one of us has written like most of it, so Maggie's Prayers was more me.
It's your grandma.
It's my grandmother's called Maggie, and she's from Paisley in Scotland. And I wanted to write that song, but there's no way I would have got to that point. Because so Beth also done quite a lot of kind of like songwriting coaching and like coaching other people. So actually, it's like kind of an ideal songwriting partner to have someone that's got that coaching experience, because they know the questions to ask to kind of like pull something out. And Maggie Spread to me, I think it's one of the a new batch of songs for me, because although I've been a songwriter for many years, I don't know, there's just like a new vein that I think I found in kind of digging a little bit deeper, being a bit more personal, not being quite so abstract, and trying to connect with something a bit deeper and writing with a purpose that's come from spending so much time with Beth songs and kind of right. working out like what is it that people are connecting with there and pulling that out. And that's been a really nice process to learn that I'm definitely a much stronger songwriter than I was, particularly lyrically, because of working with Beth. So,
right.
Yeah, but we went through that together. Like we went through line by line, and we've got kind of like a very loose process that finishes and kind of like making sure that all the lines start well and that kind of stuff. And then the final part of the process for both of us, I think, was playing it live. You know, playing it on our weekly tiny show was just a way of kind of going, oh, that didn't work, or that wasn't quite there. So that's the final stage. The song's not really written until it's performed at least once, I don't think.
Correct, yeah.
For us at least, yeah.
Yeah, because of how we write and what we write about, it's pretty, we dig pretty deep for it, and it's, all of it is true. So every word and every line is true. We don't kind of decorate it with, something that's not true, but you know, it's every single word we can account for. That's what that means, and that's just that's how we want to write. So naturally, it's going to be quite hard to write equally like that, because it's because we're not creating a story. Maybe we will do more like
there are some coming that a bit more like that, maybe.
Yeah, and when we write with other people, we do it in that way. But these three songs in particular are really personal songs, so it's gonna be, I think it's gonna be the case that one of us has written most of it, and then we craft it, and we, like Sam said, we look at the lines and type it out. How does that look? How does that read? And kind of be the detail we do together. When this is over, we were just going over words and lines and just trying to get that as that we were really happy with every word for that song,
I think our values and worldview are pretty well aligned. So that's most good. Things come from it's a good thing, like,
makes things easier.
So I think we always understand where each other's coming from, and that's helpful too. But it's a cool process. It's a nice process to go through as a couple to do that.
That's good, man. Let me ask you a question about worldviews and stuff like that. Are things as divided there as they are here?
In Britain?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I think what's happened during the pandemic is things that were kind of like underlying have just been kind of accentuated by stress and all that kind of stuff. We've had different political things going on here. You've had different political things going on there. But it's, there's definitely a partisan thing arriving. Mm-hmm. A lot of that has got to do with politics, but it's also got to do with just when people are feeling afraid or when they're feeling lost, then it's easy to kind of like define this other or this kind of enemy. And I think people are pushed into that as well a little bit. There is division here. Definitely.
I don't think it's quite as,
it's probably not as pronounced.
No, it's not. I don't think it's as on the surface as, we haven't been over this. So it could be quite different to how it's portrayed towards, the media and things like that. But
I think our political parties are more centrist.
It's so crazy. Like my dad didn't talk to me for a year from like last April until August of this year. And then, yeah. And then my sister didn't talk to me for like 4 months. There was just like this intensity to everything where it's like, for some reason, instead of having people that have a different philosophy or a different worldview, but we all have a common goal, it's like these people have been vilified to the point of like, I won't talk to my brother because I think he thinks this. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
There was a lot of that with, so over here we had Britain left the European Union.
Right, right.
That was a very divisive.
Time.
It was very divisive. And, you know, I literally, you know, heard stories about people really, really, really falling out. And, but like, I think the key thing that happened in that, because obviously everyone had their opinions, like we had our opinions about, you know, what we thought, you know,
was the right thing to do.
But what happened afterwards, where people were like really vitriolically hating each other, I was just like, oh man, I want no part of this, this argument. And I started describing my, my political ideas as, have you ever heard the story of the Chinese farmer?
No.
I can't remember what, there's a famous guy, I can't remember who told it. It's a story where there's a farmer and one day his horse runs away and everyone in the village says, oh, that's terrible. And he says, oh, we'll see. And then the horse comes back, but it's brought other horses with it. And everyone says, oh, that's amazing. And he says, oh, we'll see. And then his son tries to break one of the horses and, you know, to tame it. And he falls off and he breaks his leg and everyone says, oh, that's terrible. And then the farmer says, we'll see. And then a war breaks out and the soldiers come and they're drafting young men for the village and the son can't go because he's broken his leg. And everyone in the village says, oh, that's brilliant. That's amazing. That's great that he doesn't have to go. And the farmer says, we'll see. And it's just this idea that, you know, when you respond to something just with the little piece of information that you have at any one time, you know, you don't see the full picture. And there is this grand narrative going on since the beginning of time that we're all like part of. And we're just seeing our little piece right now. And it matters because people are living in this time now, right? But I think when we kind of zoom out and whatever your views are on life and death, when you kind of take a view of the whole of history, I think you would have a different view that you would have in the moment. And ultimately, actually, maybe the hatred for each other or the kind of division of each other would seem quite petty. And actually, the idea of being someone that would want to unify with people and basically bring light into a dark world, I think that is that's the story that I want to tell.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there are rational Gaudis out there.
Hey, there are. Yeah, we know a few.
Sometimes. we are currently without a house traveling around.
It's true. Yeah, that's
kids,
true.
So I'm not sure if that's rational.
So where, what are you guys, like when your travels and you're out there, at first when I read that in your bio, it seemed like, are they on the run? But are you guys... like, is there some kind of like, well, we hope to get to this place and do this, or are you just going to be a traveling family of minstrels?
Yeah. No, we're not. It's funny because we sometimes feel like we disappoint people when they see us with our van and they're like, oh, let's see where you sleep then. And we're like, oh, it's not a sleeper. That's not what we're actually doing. We did buy a van because, like, we've got stuff to still carry around. Our guitars are quite long.
Guitars and kids' toys.
And diggers and trucks and dollies and things. But actually what happened for us was it was about a year ago, so it was August time. And again, we were in the height of all of this, you know, this the pandemic or whatever. But we were driving, it wasn't new, but this feeling had been with us for a while. We'd been living where we were living for about 6 years at that point. And this feeling had been sitting there for quite a long time of, well, like, we know it's not here. Like, we know that this is not where we're going to be. but like the years were ticking on, and suddenly, like, you know, I think having our kids as well, and thinking about, you know, they're still like preschool and early years, but their life is you know, going on too, and our, you know, our eldest will be four next, and so that, I think there was a bit of urgency from that, but also this question of like what you know, what matters to us, you know, if this was the end of everything, how would we want to be living, and what would we be doing, what would we throw everything into, you know, and the first answer is raising our kids, you know, and our family life, and the second thing is music. That's the vehicle, at least for us, to bring whatever good we can, you know, into people's lives, and so we just decided to just take it seriously, I think, and to jump in. That's what I keep saying. We just wanted to jump in with both feet, and part of that process for us was letting go of the life that we kind of accidentally built for ourselves. When we got to where we lived in the past, we knew that was a season. You know, it wasn't meant to be like that. We're bedding down and we're going to build this kind of family life here.
Right.
But we stayed a long time, you know, and we've got great friends, great memories. That was a really good time in our life. There was no bad reason that we, you know, that we left. It was just that it was like time to take that feeling seriously. And so we sold up because we had to let go of that life. And also we couldn't have moved on with all the stuff that we'd acquired over those years. So we really did whittle our stuff down to what you can get into the back of a van. So that's all we own, other than some memory boxes that we've...
Your wedding dresses.
In Paris, you know. And the journey we're on is that we're waiting to find out where we're going to live next, where we can best do...
A new place called home.
So family life and music, that you know, where that's going to work best. And so we're kind of on that journey of just figuring that out. And we don't intend to be doing this road thing for a really long time. It's actually just the way that it's gone so far. You know, we're just kind of waiting, and there's a few doors that we're pushing just to see if it's there. But we're making the most of it as well. So we're seeing the country when we can, and you know, we're in the northeast of England, and we don't know it very well. So we're trying to get out to as many places. And so on one hand, we are traveling and enjoying that, but on the other, it's kind of, we're just figuring out where to base ourselves next.
It's a bit of a pilgrimage without a destination. I think that's kind of cool, like, what we're doing right now.
It's great fun. Yeah.
We've seen things that we would have never seen even in our country, which has been amazing. Yeah. There's a place up here called Holy Island, which is just off the coast of northeast England. And it's just like one of our favorite places in the world now. Like, it's just an island just off the coast. And certain times a day you can drive across, certain times a day there's the sea across it. But there's been like a kind of Celtic community there since like, what, like 600?
Yeah, very nice.
600 wow. AD. Like really crazy thing. A monk came across from Iona and then basically established a monastery there. And there's been a community of monks and believers there since 600 AD.
It's a really rich place.
Really rich, beautiful, beautiful place. And you can really sense, it's what the Celts call it, a thin place, you know, it's just a beautiful place. So there's things like that that we've kind of, we've experienced that we've just never seen. And then also just all the in-betweens, like we've been driving, just with the way things work, we ended up doing about three 9-hour drives within the space of a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And lots of time in the car is great. We actually, our kids travel very well, like, and we enjoy being on the in-between. We enjoy the kind of like, we obviously also enjoy a bed and a house.
Yeah, and it'll be a good day when we get a house again.
But it's definitely made us light, and it's definitely set our eyes on something just more. Just asking, like, what more is there to life than what we had? And it's good to kind of make yourself uncomfortable sometimes, I think. There's something in that.
It shows us what our relationship to things, you know. So much of this stuff was easy to get rid of, and then there were just these odd things where it was really hard for me, you know, you had things as well. And so I was, that was
difficult, but actually it was really good. It was a really good process as well. We just had a full house. You can imagine, you know, just cups and mugs and photo frames and a tent and sofas and beds and like the stuff you don't even think about owning until you've got to empty your house out. And it was a really healthy process. And I think when we do have a home, I'll feel it differently in that it won't be as much at all.
In an intentional way.
I'm going to be moving in with my girlfriend who has a smaller place than mine, but like just my, let me see. I'll unplug this and show, give you guys a little virtual tour of what's going on here. It's just all like fucking musical instruments and everything you can imagine around the world here.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to figure out like where everything's going to go. Like, I mean, here I have keyboards like stacked against, I've got two stacked against a piano over there. It's all crazy. I hope I didn't make you guys sick.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's that whole thing where I'm like, I'm going through that thing in my mind right now. So it's nice to hear someone that was so, it sounds freeing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
You have to cross this line. You definitely have to cross this line, which is that you cross this line, which is tough to do. And then it's quite easy. All the like charity shops were closed because it was lockdown when we were doing this.
Right.
So we couldn't do the usual thing of like filling up boxes and taking it to a charity shop or, you know, whatever. So we ended up just like putting it like, you know, on any given day, we just have like tons of stuff out in our front garden and people walking past would be like, is this seriously free? We're like, yeah, we can't sell it. So take it. And we you know, it was that as well, was a great feeling to give things away that we could have earned something from, you know, we didn't have the time or ability to sell it. So we kind of settled, you know, within ourselves, we were going to give a lot of stuff away. And instead of resenting that, we really leaned into it and just loved giving stuff away. It was really fun.
It was cool having stuff just like pass out of your hands, isn't it?
And
essentially, I think now there's probably no material possession that I'm like, oh gosh, I couldn't give that away. Mm-hmm. Like when we first started, I was like, yeah, I'm going to be okay. But there's a few things like I couldn't get rid of, like certain guitars or something like that. Like genuinely now, like I've realized that the value of those things is in like my history or experience with them. Like, for example, like my guitar, I've played the same acoustic since I was 18. And so, you know, well over, you know, well, nearly half my life. And I always thought, oh no, there's no way I'd ever be able to get rid of that particular guitar. But I realized the other day that like the like kind of legacy of that object is just in the way I play guitar, because it's a parlor and it's probably defined how I play and all that kind of stuff. And that's the value of that thing. So I can now, I'll be able to like play another like guitar in the same way. And yeah, there's nothing now that I kind of went on to like that. And the other thing that I learned was I read this book about minimalism, and the guy said that you're not building a museum. And that was a really helpful thing, that like all these things that I've kind of like assigned value to, you're saying, you know, they're in you, those memories and all that kind of stuff. Like the thing itself is not the memory. That was really, really good.
The things that we kept, because we do have this box of maybe one each actually, of like memory things. The things that I had, like a stuff from my childhood, which I know I'll just always enjoy looking over that. You know, when I'm every 5 years or something, I'll enjoy looking back at that and it'll make me smile. But then there are things that like somebody made for us or gave us where like that could never happen again. So those things we kept, those things were important to us.
Right,
but
right.
even something we bought that cost a lot of money or you know, to us, or if it's possible to get it again, we've kind of released it and thought it's just ours right now, but like, we don't need it, you know, we don't need it, we're not using it right now, so we'll pass it on.
Yeah,
maybe one of our children crying.
Well, man,
my mom sees it.
This has been great talking to you guys and getting to know you a bit. I hope you come to Austin at some point. For people would love you guys here.
You know, I was looking on Spotify earlier, and our top city, or like the city with like the most listeners, is Dallas.
Dallas,
yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, which is interesting.
Yeah,
Dallas, just obviously just north. Is it north?
It's like 3 hours north of here.
Yeah,
it's a very different. It's a very different mindset, though.
To Austin.
Yeah, Austin's very different mindset than the rest of Texas.
Is Matthew McConaughey? Is he in Austin?
Yes,
it is Austin, isn't it? Really randomly, I listened to a podcast that he was on. I don't follow his career or anything, you know, I've seen him and stuff. But for some reason, I listened to this and he was talking about what Austin is like. And he was really championing it. Yeah. But he was talking about what the culture of Austin, what it seems like everybody's trying to build this same thing. It sounded really cool.
Yeah. Paul Simon just got a place here.
Really?
Wow,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Big music city, eh? Like Austin City Limits. That's been like one of the things that I've enjoyed watching.
Yeah,
you know, going back through.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great export from here, and kind of like gives a good idea. At least the older ones before it kind of became like Coldplay and stuff on there. It used to really give kind of an idea of what this town was about musically. Which, by the way, having Coldplay and you know all kinds of other people on there really is showing where the mindset of the town isn't so much singer-songwriter anymore. It still is a haven, but it, you know, it's like second in Americana to Nashville.
Wow.
No, really?
So, we're planning some American visits, aren't we?
We've got plans for next year to come.
When the news kind of came yesterday, we were in a kind of mad scramble because we had some flights booked. We were just kind of like working things out, but they're just kind of recce trips, I think, at the moment to America.
But one is West Coast, and then next year is East Coast.
Yeah, that's
awesome.
So we're hoping to see Nashville is obviously a spot that we're trying to get to, but there's actually some surrounding areas on the East Coast kind of keen on all of it. So. Texas being one of them. Austin.
Great. And Dallas, of course, where they love you.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's it. Yeah. I mean, relatively speaking.
Who's in Dallas?
We're huge in Dallas.
Yeah, so... Who knew? We hope to get out there.
Well, people
relatively soon, if they let us.
People can keep up with you at thegowdies.com, which sounds like a website that's just loaded with my family members yelling at me.
Yeah,
but now
who didn't get on this?
I had a band called Gowdy.
Yeah, we were talking about this. That was really cool.
It's weird. I can't remember how I came across your music, but I did. Right, I reached out to you. Didn't I?
That's it. Yeah. I'm kind of interested in this idea that there's quite a few Gowdies involved in the arts.
Yeah.
Like when you look around and stuff. And so I was just like, I think I typed in and showed something and then I saw your face came up and and I thought like, oh, we could just like connect with other musical galleries.
Yeah. And, I just remember going and listening to your stuff and going like, shit, these guys are really good.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm glad we're doing the name proud. That's
when we kind of launched the Gowdies, we had talked a bit about it. I was like, oh, I feel like we maybe should have checked with some Gowdies if they didn't mind.
We're not the Gowdies, we're some Gowdies.
We're some Gowdies. Johnny, I'm going to have to jump off because we'll have our little crying. So,
okay, well,
we're finishing up.
We're finishing up. It's great meeting you guys. Yeah. And stay in touch. I'd love to see you if you ever come to town or if I make it wherever you guys are taking the van. And
amazing.
Yeah, man. Great talking to you guys and great record. People get out there and check out When This Is Over, thegowdies.com. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you. Yeah.
Great speaking to you.
Yeah, talking to you. Bye.
Bye.
She lights a candle for them all. See a flicker in a window.
That's Sam and Beth Gowdy, known as The Gowdies. When This Is Over, their debut EP, available now. Go to thegowdies.com to get involved. You can see their weekly live show, Tiny Show Tuesdays. their live stream, not their live show. You know what I mean? Live stream. You know what I mean? What a great conversation. Fabulous people, lovely people, amazing musicians, great songwriters. We got to get them over here to Austin. Maybe they'll come at like a South by Southwest thing and we'll get to meet in person. Maybe. Hey, gang, don't forget when you're checking out thegowdies.com, you can always subscribe to this podcast, wherever it is you find podcasts, be it Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Overcast, Stitcher, anywhere. We're dropping 3 shows a week this week and next week, but normally it's Tuesdays and Fridays. New shows, new conversations. Oh my God, this is episode 1100. I realized that I didn't even say anything about it. Oh my God, I'm not redoing that intro. I'm not redoing that intro. All right, enjoy the rest of this song by the Gowdies. Go check out their EP when this is over. Great talking to them. Thank you, Sam and Beth, for doing the show. Thank you for listening. Have a great weekend, and let's get down.
And as the words take flight, I kiss my children goodnight. With every blessing that I find, I see it's more than a matter of time. I owe the goodness of my life to Maggie's prayer. I struck the match that starts the flame, smoking ash inside my bedroom. My house is burning, didn't think I could be saved. Will I live to see the day? I couldn't hear a word she said, but I still read them in a letter. Hold fast to Jesus, son, it's better off that way, and it gets better every day. And as the words take flight, I kiss my children goodnight. With every blessing that I find, I see it's more than a matter of time. I owe the goodness of my life to Maggie's prayer. Or before me, bird, I stood proud and I fell deeper, deeper underground. She was faithful and kept on asking, reach down and pull him out. I don't know how something changed. When it did, I heard the warning. Faith is certain of the things it's yet to see, and she saw it all for me. And as the words take flight, I kiss my children goodnight. With every blessing that I find, I see it's more than a matter of time. I owe the goodness of my life to Maggie's prayer.